So the news is that Lucy Westlake of Naperville is now the youngest woman to ever summit Mount Everest. Is that right?
She's the youngest American woman. That is correct. There's foreign women that have summited younger.
Well, congratulations to her and to you all. Rodney, let's start with you. You were there, I guess, with her on the journey. You were at base camp when she summited. Is that right?
So I was there on the journey. We flew in together, and there was a team of us, including Lucy, 10 of us, and we all trekked up to base camp together. So that was a lot of fun. It takes 8 days to do that with acclimating along the way. And then we got to spend 2 days at base camp with her before we all descended, and she stayed on the mountain. I could not stay at base camp because, to be honest with you, she could be there. You know, normally it takes another month or maybe sometimes 45 more days to summit. You never know when that's going to happen. So I had to get back to the real world.
So then you came back to the U.S.?
I did. Yep. I came back about 2 weeks before she summited.
She's 18 years old. She's with a group of extreme, I think, climbers. What's the name of the club that she's with?
That is correct. Extreme Climbers, and they're based out of Kathmandu, Nepal.
Oh, my
gosh. They're a local company over there, yes. And it was just Lucy and her Sherpa, when it came time to actually climbing the mountain, it was just the two of them together climbing. And her Sherpa is one of the most well-known Everest Sherpas. This was his 16th time to summit the mountain.
My goodness. Often when we see the pictures, though, but I presume she was with more than just her Sherpa. Normally you see a group of 10, 15, 50 people climbing up. Was it just the two of them?
Yeah, yes. The answer is yes. It was a little unusual. You're right. Normally, people like for example, we've been a part of guided groups in the past. And no, a guided group is never just two people. But this company, we found out about them kind of word of mouth, and we were not a team, we were just us, and they realized pretty quickly that with Lucy's experience and with her ability to acclimatize even beforehand, we have an altitude tent, and also she was training in Kenya at over 7,000 feet for about a month, so they realized that she really wouldn't belong in another group because that would essentially slow her down. So they put her with a very experienced Sherpa, and it was really just the two of them. Even though, that being said, when you're on the mountain and when you're with and around other teams all the time, but they were just a team of two.
I see.
When you say a team, it means who are you roped up to? Who's on the rope with you? So it was just her and her Sherpa. But in pictures, you'll see other people because there's just other teams that are roped up together near them, behind them and forth, because you have to understand on Everest, there's a group of Sherpas that put in, they call them fixed lines, and they're essentially
protection.
Protection, yeah. So you have to clip in, you have a harness on, and you have to clip into this rope as you go up the very dangerous sections of Everest. And so that's why you always see single file lines on Everest, because everybody is clipping into that same rope.
Did she climb with oxygen?
She did, yep.
Yes.
Yep. That was something we were debating, but honestly, when I'm not even there, I mean, you know, she's an adult woman now, so she can make these decisions, but we were relieved to know that she was going to have every advantage offered to her.
And her accomplishment isn't just climbing Everest, but it's her goal to be on the summits of the highest mountains on all of the continents, plus Antarctica and the Arctic, correct?
That is correct. It's called the Explorer's Grand Slam is what her ultimate goal is. She would be becoming the youngest person, male or female, to ever do this if she accomplishes it by her goal. And you have to obviously do it during the climbing seasons in the Arctic and Antarctica. So those seasons are, Antarctica season is in December and January, and then the North Pole season is in April. So her goal is to complete it all. She'd be ending at the North Pole next April 2023.
She's, I understand, quite an accomplished athlete and is going to USC to run cross-country and track. Did I see that also?
That is correct, yes. She is a very accomplished distance runner. So she was recruited at the University of Southern California for cross-country and then also to be a 5,000, 10,000-meter runner on her track team.
So I guess she's an athlete, but to look at her, she's not a brawny, burly sort of person. She looks rather trim and slight, like maybe a cross-country runner. I I'm amazed that she has the stamina, and I'm amazed that anybody does, but just talk about her physical prowess.
Well, you know, yeah, a little bit about mountaineering is you do have quite a bit of weight that you're responsible for. It doesn't matter what size, you know, it doesn't matter what size you are. You're responsible for your own personal protection, like your gear. And when that is one disadvantage of just having the two of them was that she was responsible for quite a bit more gear than I think maybe the average Everest climber is. And she did say that those were the hardest days of her life, especially the first time she had to climb, like the day after I left her, actually, she had to climb the Kumba Icefall to Camp One with almost 50 pounds on her back, which, you know, when you weigh 105 pounds, that's significant. And she said it was just unbelievably difficult. And then, of course, Summit Day itself, you don't have as much weight on your back, but the distance and the amount of time that you're climbing, you know, with that weight on your back adds up. I think she said the one other day was extremely difficult. It was a day that she went from Camp 2 to Camp 3, where they were leaving weight at Camp 3. And similarly, I think she had about 45 to 50 pounds on her back, and that was really difficult.
Yeah, she will tell you that, I mean, she's been, since she was born, she's kind of been, we just knew she was an athlete. You know, she just had that, that just natural ability to run more than anything. Her endurance is just pretty unique. Never met anybody that has the endurance like she does. But she's been a runner since first grade. She's been running long distances. And then she's also a triathlete. Quite an accomplished triathlete too. She gave up her triathlon career about 2 years ago to focus solely on running to be recruited in college. But she was also in the top three in the nation in her triathlon career. So she was, you know, training 3-4 hours every day all through high school, swimming, biking, and running. So she is quite a very, very in shape.
Well, I guess she missed the state track meet then because she was climbing Mount Everest, huh?
She did, yes. And she actually had to miss last year's state track meet too. She had to make some very difficult decisions because last year she just chose to climb Denali because, you know, the both Everest and Denali have very, very short climbing seasons. So you have to go during the weeks that the season is open. So last year she was on Denali, and that's when she set a world record as the youngest female to complete all 50 of the U.S. state high points. And then this year she had to choose her senior track year, which was a very, very difficult decision. But her coach supported her and said, you know, Lucy, climbing Denali and climbing Everest are, you know, very unique situations, so go do that, you know. So that's why she missed both of those track seasons, unfortunately, or state meets for that.
And when you're on the mountain, even as you choose to summit, I mean, I've read a little bit about this, the weather can be precarious, can be unpredictable. Were you worried? Was she worried? How was the weather as she was summiting?
Yeah, no, it is. That's one of the dangers and difficulties in mountaineering. It's kind of the mental game. You do all this work, you're mentally prepared to attempt a summit, and then you are forced down the mountain. That even happened on Everest. They were up at Camp 3, hoping for a weather window about 4 days before, or 4 or 5 days before she actually summited, and the winds just, you know, became too dangerous, so they had to descend down to Camp 2. And yeah, it is a very difficult thing to have to turn around when the goal is to get to the top and then get safely off the mountain. Turning around, you just know it's obviously delaying you, and yeah, that's one of the challenges.
And that's also incredibly so important on these big mountains, is because that's when you hear the tragic stories, is when people don't make the right decisions based on the weather. So it's tough. Every mountaineer will tell you that when you want to go up so bad, and that's when people make the wrong decisions, but you obviously have to go down.
Yeah.
When the weather is safe. Yeah. But they have, on these big mountains, Denali, Everest, they have meteorologists that are solely committed during these very short climbing seasons of about 3 or 4 weeks that are solely committed to providing the guides and the Sherpas with constant weather updates. So it's pretty incredible, the technology now on these mountains.
So what's the temperature up there, and what speed are the winds when you get up there?
Well, I heard that it was about negative 20 degrees from near the summit. So they were hiking. They left Camp 4 at 8:20 p.m. So they hiked all through the night. And they said the wind was 40 to 50 miles an hour, freezing winds, 40 to 50 miles an hour. And but luckily, it kind of calmed a little bit through the night. It calmed a little bit. So I think it was about 30 to 40 mile an hour winds as they were getting closer to the top.
Boy, that really speaks to oh my gosh, I can't. That says something about the technology, the equipment, the resource. I mean, to take nothing away from the physical accomplishment, but that you can even survive, let alone climb a mountain in those conditions, is amazing.
It's really amazing. The gear, what you're wearing, everything is so precise. Like extreme climbers, like to do these mountains, they say it's like threading a needle. You know, it just has to be so precise. Your gear has to be perfect. The weather has to be perfect. It all has to line up for you.
Yeah. So before you climb, that's a big part of what you're doing is organizing, and you have all your gear laid out. And you know, in this case, her Sherpa and the person organizing the trip wanted to look at all the gear. Of course, you know, that makes nothing but sense. So, you know, when you're by yourself, you're organizing this and doing this all on your own. And we've actually only had guided trips occasionally, this being one of them. When we just recently summited Denali and Aconcagua, we were not guided. So you have to just sort of be in charge of your own, your gear and be making these decisions on your own. But, you know, a quick point about Amy was saying that meteorologists all over the world study the weather and they try to give, you know, good forecasts. But the fact is there's no better forecast than just eyes on the mountain and people who know the mountain and know where the weather comes from and know what to look for. There's really no meteorologist in the world that can take the place of somebody who has experience on the mountains themselves. So that's caused many people to fail and even die in the past is getting an incorrect meteorologist forecast.
Who does this sort of thing? Who the heck are you people? This is the...
I know, you know, it's not anything that we, it's just not anything that we set out to do. It's true. It's something that we're, I mean, Lucy and I have grown together in the sport, and it's a wonderful sport. I mean, it starts off just by being out in this beautiful world and in the nature that we love, because we've always loved the mountains. But as these mountains get bigger and more difficult, it does kind of become a little addicting. It's just such a wonderful way to see mm-hmm. an area. It's a wonderful way to meet people culturally, like whatever mountain you're climbing in, whatever country it is. It's just such a great way to.
But Rodney, you didn't set out someday when she was young. You didn't say someday we're going to climb all of the mountains of the world and go to the North Pole and South Pole. I mean, did you?
No.
I mean, I could tell a year ago I was not even considering Everest. That was not a mountain. I mean, these mountains cost so much money. I mean, you know, Everest and these other big kind of high cost mountains are never anything that I was interested in doing. I love mountaineering just for the, and so does Lucy, just for the sake of mountaineering. But there is some wonderful things that come from accomplishing these goals. And some of it's just even like the notoriety and being able to encourage others in the sport and maybe pursuing, you know, or, you know, lifting up a nonprofit or something like that. It's a wonderful way to gain exposure for that. But no, just being in the mountains on their own is really the best part of the sport.
Well, how do you finance this? How much does it cost to, I mean, I think I know the answer to this. I don't know what your expenses were, but these sorts of things are serious five-figure endeavors, aren't they?
Yeah. So for us, that's a major factor, and it always is. And so that was one of the reasons. The more and more you climb, obviously, the more connections you get, and the more people you meet, and things like that. So there's a lot of American companies that, if you just kind of search for guide companies on Everest or whatever, you get U.S.-based companies. They're twice as expensive as going with a local company in Nepal. So that's how we got a recommendation for the company in Nepal, which was half the amount. It's still very expensive, but half the amount of what the U.S. companies charge.
But again, to be more clear, the U.S. companies aren't gouging. They are just passing their costs down to the clients. It's not their fault. It's because Nepalese guides don't have to pay foreign permits fees. So foreign permit fees are way more expensive than the fees that the Nepalese Sherpas have to pay. So yeah, if your guide happens to be Nepalese, then boom, you're already paying, you know, $20,000 less than if your guide's an American, for example.
My guess was $50,000 by the time you're there. You stay there for a couple months, you pay a Sherpa, you get the license, you go up and down the mountain. That's probably $50,000 for her to be there, right?
That's pretty low. That's it's hard to find. It's hard to find anyone, honestly, that only pays $50,000 to climb Everest. We were lucky enough to get it closer to $40,000. That's why her GoFundMe, was for $40,000, because that's what our cost.
Yeah.
Well, without the tip, I mean, once she's summited, you owe that Sherpa as a tip. $50,000 is more realistic because you have to fly there. Yeah, it's true. That doesn't include all the flights and everything like that. But that's extremely low. If you really ask people, like guiding companies, what's an average cost to climb Everest, they're going to tell you probably between $60,000 and $100,000 is the average.
Yeah.
I mean, you can pay. There's luxury ways of going up these mountains where you can pay, you know, helicopter everywhere and pay, you know, $130,000 to climb Everest. But we were happy when we found a way to do it for under $50,000. That was a
and that doesn't come with a guarantee that you summit either, does it?
Oh no!
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Which is the danger of the thing, isn't it? Because sometimes people at 28,000 feet who may be a little oxygen starved aren't maybe in the clearest mind to make that decision. Is it safe? And in the back of their mind, they're thinking, "This is my one shot, and I'm out $100,000." Yep. So they just keep going. Correct. You really do
that
need to have.
Yep, that's exactly what happened. That's exactly why people die on these big mountains. You just described exactly what happened.
Well,
I mean, there's the mental. So turning around is, you're right, turning around can be a financial burden, so to speak, but really it's not. You're going to spend the money to go on the mountain regardless, whether you summit or not. And that's one of the big lessons Lucy learned when she was 13 and when we were unsuccessful climbing Denali the first time. We were with a guided company. That's why we did it unguided the second time, because it just allows that flexibility. We had plenty of food and gas. We could have been on the mountain for 30 days, you know, or more.
Yeah.
And then it ended up only taking us 19 or 20 to summit. But we didn't have anyone else's itinerary to tell us what we had or had not to do. But no, going down was an amazing life lesson for both of us, really, but especially for Lucy. She had to kind of come to grips with whether she really was interested in climbing these big mountains and putting that much energy and time and money into something and have it turn out, you know, unsuccessful. So
Lucy,
it was really an amazing part of her journey to mountaineering. And I think that's why I trust her so much. That's why we both trusted her to be able to go on Everest with a guide that we trusted, with a Sherpa that we trusted. But also mainly we trusted her to make the right decision.
Lucy, your daughter, Lucy Westlake, that's Rodney Westlake and his wife, Amy. They're talking about this 18-year-old Naperville woman, the youngest woman ever to summit Mount Everest. Did she relay for you? We'll visit with her ourselves later in the week. But did she relay to you a moment of danger or something that was especially difficult? What was the biggest challenge for her? Did she slip at any point?
You know, actually, thankfully, Everest went fairly successful for her. She said she felt really good most of the time. She said the only time we ever heard any kind of, I guess you could almost say, doubt is she said when she was at Camp 4 and they had arrived at Camp 4 and she knew. So you arrive at Camp 4 and you're going to get about 8 hours of rest. You're not going to sleep there, and about 8 hours of rest, and then you're going to start the summit at 8:20 at night. And so she said during that period of quote rest, when she looked up at the mountain, she said it was so daunting. She said it looked impossible what she had left and to do. So that was the only time she just thought to herself, how in the world am I ever going to get to the top? But then she'll tell you, you just put one foot in front of the other and before you know it, you're there.
Sure, before you know it. And what about her academics then? I mean, she's going to USC. She's obviously a college student. How, with the travels, not only for Everest, but everything else she's done, was she able to graduate high school and so forth?
Yeah, actually, I have to give so much credit to Naperville North, her high school. They have supported her athletics. They've just been so good to her because she was also a triathlete, like I said, which she traveled around the country competing in triathlon because she was in the top three in the nation in that sport. And when we approached the high school when she was going in, they just they really said, okay, we'll work with her. Because Lucy is a 4.6 grade point average. She is one of the top students in her high school. She's in the top 1% of her high school. And she's straight A's basically her entire high school career. Lucy works really hard at whatever she sets her mind to. And thankfully, she was able to travel and do things. She's just very self-motivated. And she sat down with her counselor her freshman year and said, I want to graduate, you know, early. I want to have some time to climb mountains before I go off to college. And they mapped it out and she doubled up on math and doubled up on English and worked really hard and made it happen.
Cavities, pimples. Is there anything that she has that I can relate to?
She is a normal teenage girl. She really is.
Wow.
Believe it or not, she's just nobody. If you ask anybody that knows Lucy, she's so humble. They would say you would never, ever, ever know this about Lucy. Because she wouldn't even tell you about it. So, she's really a normal high school girl. She loves to hang out with her friends. She loves to, just do fun things. So,
what's the matter, Amy?
Yeah.
Amy, what's the matter?
I'm sorry. I you forgive me. I had to do a trade real quick. What is Lucy? Yeah, Lucy is just very lucky. She's been very blessed, and luckily the talents that she was given, she was able to kind of develop. And, you know, you can have these physical talents, but the fact is, as we all know, if you ever ask an elite athlete what it takes, it takes a mental and an emotional, and in her case, a spiritual maturity to achieve the things that she's been able to achieve. And so, yeah, I guess after everything is said and done, we're just so thankful that she has the ability. And like Amy said, you know, just graduating early opened up so many doors for her. And honestly, she has these goals, but a lot of these goals are very dependent. And she knew that, very dependent on life circumstances, just because, you might think we have to be rich to be able to do all these things. But the fact is, just about every single one of these mountains didn't cost hardly anything to climb. And at these points, that's when I've been having to say, hey, Lucy, you're just going to have to start to fundraise because I'm not going to mortgage the house so you can go climb this mountain. So we're just taking it one day at a time and one month at a time. And yeah, she's having a great time doing it. But I think she is excited to be a college student and especially a college athlete. When Amy referenced earlier, her coach's blessing, it was her USC coach's blessing, her future college coach, who is also wonderful and understands her motivations and her desire and drive. And it's like, go for it. Yeah, he's great.
One last thing. So she's also going to go to the South Pole. She's going to go to Antarctica, to the southernmost point of the planet. Is that correct?
If she fundraises.
She's got a lot of fundraising to do before that happens. But yeah, no, yeah. The thing about going to Antarctica is the cost is in the flight getting there. To summit Vincent and to go to the South Pole, don't get me wrong, they're not inexpensive endeavors, but the flights there are just unbelievably expensive. So yes, the goal, and you would not want to do those in two separate trips. So the goal is to go there once and accomplish both of those objective. So that is what she's hoping to do this December. We've mapped it out, and she could do that after her final exams during her winter break. There's enough time for her to do both those things if we can raise the funds.
Okay, well, that will conclude our 8-minute interview. we could do this for 8 hours, and then we hope to visit with her later in the week or sometime next week when she gets back, okay?
That sounds wonderful, yeah.
She'll look forward to it. She really loves to share her story.
And one last thing,
yeah,
Amy.
This is radio. She really, really enjoys. She got to do radio when she was in Louisville this last summer, and yeah, she really enjoys it.
Well, does your family or her does your immediate family think you people are crazy, or that this is just beyond the pale? What's the reaction from your closest family members and friends?
Yeah, my parents particularly. They say that we've given them so many gray hair. Lucy's given them so many gray hairs, and they get incredibly nervous when she's on the mountains. But they just like us. We've learned to grow with Lucy, and the mountains have just gotten bigger and bigger, and we're all getting kind of used to it now.
Amy, did you get a call from her on the summit, and what was that like when she said, "Mom, I made it"?
Unfortunately, we did not get a call from Lucy. Because apparently it was very, very windy and cold up there.
There is no cell phone coverage on Everest. You cannot get a call.
But they use satellite phones, right?
There are radios. There's radio contact.
Yeah,
but it's straight back to the base camp.
Well, put it this way. What was it like when you first were able to find out that she had accomplished it?
Yeah. So we are able to track her on a satellite device, so we could see that she was very close to the summit, but we just weren't sure when she was on the summit. But we got a call from Extreme Climbers, the head guy of Extreme Climbers, that had heard from radio, you know, from the Sherpa that they had summited. So we were screaming, like we were just jumping up and down, just screaming and screaming, and, you know, called a million friends and celebrated. And it was really, really an exciting moment. Hmm.
I have to say, the truth is mountaineering forces you to be spiritual. It forces you to pray a lot, you know, for whether it's weather or whether you're slightly injured or, you know, whether you have a daughter or somebody in Everest. Suddenly you have to have some sort of spiritual support because, it's just an amazing sport where you cannot control all the variables and you just have to trust.
I was thinking Chardonnay, but prayer, whatever it is that gets you through it, is
well, it's much heavier than Chardonnay.
Yeah, bourbon is a fine choice. Well, listen, to both of you, congratulations. What a thrill it must be for your family. I can sense how proud you are, and we'll say hello to her in the coming days. So thanks for giving us some of your time this afternoon.
It was a pleasure. Thank
Absolute
you so
pleasure.
Much.
Amy, thank you. Rodney, thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.